This is a podcast from the Business Times.
A stormy EGM at Sabana Industrial REIT, an exodus of top executives from the manager of Manulife US REIT, and a growing number of REITs that are halting their distributions, either partially or in full. REITs have a wide investor following in the Singapore market, but higher interest rates are taking their toll on the whole sector. And even some of the largest REITs exposed to the stable Singapore market are trying to reduce their gearing. Are Singapore's REITs facing a cyclical downturn or something more serious? Should investors look for winners among the biggest losers in the sector or among the ones that have sustained their performance? Welcome to the BT Mark to Market podcast. My name is Ben Paul, and I'm a senior correspondent at the Business Times. This series of podcasts, which is based on my weekly column in the Business Times, aims to provide analysis and insight on market trends and corporate issues in Singapore. We're in the month of April 2024, and many market watchers are still optimistic that interest rates will soften later this year and provide a tailwind for global markets. But that does not seem to be helping the local REIT sector. During the first quarter of this year, the iEdge S-REIT Index has delivered a total return of negative 7.1%, with only a small proportion of its components in positive territory. In the studio with me today is my colleague Raphael Lim, who's been closely covering Singapore-listed REITs and has agreed to help me make sense of everything that's been happening in the sector.
Hi, good morning, Ben. Happy to be here.
Now, Ralph, we'll come back to some of the more dramatic stories in the sector, those involving Sabana REIT and Manulife US REIT, which I mentioned earlier. But let me first address the question of why REITs have been so weak. The way I see it, even though many investors expect the Fed to begin cutting rates later this year, the significant rise in interest rates in 2023 and 2022 have really changed the operating backdrop for the REITs. Debt is a crucial element of every REIT's capital structure, so any change in the cost of debt is going to have a big impact on their distributable income. And for REITs that are exposed to some of the weaker or more volatile segments of the property market, the reduced availability of debt is now a real problem. Would you agree with that view, Ralph? Is debt the underlying problem for the REITs?
Well, yes, Ben. I mean, what we've seen is higher debt costs have definitely been weighing down distributions by the REITs. When I was compiling the results for the second half 2023 financial performance of the locally listed REITs, I found that around three quarters of the sector had year-on-year declines in distributions per unit, or DPU. Now, what is also interesting is that the majority of S-REITs, roughly two-thirds, had higher gross revenue and net property income during the period. So it's pretty clear that REITs are doing quite okay on the top line basis. Rents are still being paid, occupancy remains healthy, and rent reversions are positive across most of the sector. But what has been a drag has been the higher finance cost for the REITs. The strongest performers in the second half has been those in the hospitality space still. Far East Hospitality Trust, CapitaLand Ascott Trust, and Ara Hospitality were on top in terms of DPU growth year on year. If we look at some of the operational numbers, I think what has also been quite consistent is that Singapore-based assets in general, whether it's office, retail, or industrial, they've all performed relatively well with stable occupancies and positive reversions. Where we see more struggles are the REITs with predominantly overseas assets, and I think we can touch a bit more on this later.
Now, of course, all eyes are glued on when the Fed might start trimming interest rates. How do you think that will impact the REITs?
I think we need to think about this in several ways. So firstly, even if rates are cut now, the impact to the bottom line would still be present for some time because many REITs have existing fixed rate debt that predates the current rate hike cycle. So on a fundamental level, the high rate environment would still weigh on the sector even if rate cuts do materialize. Having said that, I think what's worth considering is investor sentiment as well and how they might react when the Fed first starts cutting rates. Some of this we've already seen late last year. So when there were signs inflation was starting to taper in the US, the sector posted really strong rallies in November and December. In fact, I think December was the best ever month for S-REITs, you know, just on expectations of rate cuts, even though nothing actually materialized at that stage.
Okay, so the market's going to keep anticipating movements in interest rates going forward.
Yes, I think that there will be something we would see.
Okay, I mean, Raf, you know, just coming back to the point of debt costs, you know, it's bad enough that higher debt costs have reduced distributions that many REITs are able to pay. But we've also seen some REITs voluntarily halting distributions in order to keep their gearing in check. One case in point that I've written about is Keppel Pacific OQS REIT, or CORE, spelled with a K. You know, despite being exposed to the volatile U.S. property sector, CORE actually reported fairly positive financial results for 2023. Its revenue increased by 1.9%. Its net property income was up 2.2%. And despite higher debt costs, its distributable income fell about 13.8%, which was not too bad. Nevertheless, CORE decided to suspend its distributions from the second half of last year until the end of 2025. And the reason CORE's manager took this drastic decision is because CORE's portfolio has been adversely affected by increased capitalization rates and discount rates. This in turn inflated CORE's aggregate leverage to 43.2% at the end of 2023, up from 38.2% at the end of 2022. Once a REIT's gearing climbs over 40% or 42%, alarm bells start going off, especially if the REIT's portfolio consists of volatile properties that might be difficult to refinance. By holding on to its distributable income, CORE will be reducing its gearing, and it might even accumulate enough cash to pay off the $75 million of debt that comes due at the end of this year. Of course, the decision to suspend distributions decimated the already depressed market price of CORE's units. The last time I checked, CORE was trading at 16 US cents, which is a 77% discount to its NAV of 69 US cents per unit. Raf, let me ask you, do you think the manager of CORE did the right thing by preemptively suspending its distributions, given the impact that was going to have on the market value of its units?
Right. And I think, like, to really understand the decision that the manager made, we have to look at the broader market. I mean, let's face it, when a REIT suspends distributions, investors are going to flee. But CORE isn't the only REIT that has suspended its distributions so far. We have seen 6 of the 40 S REITs and business trusts fully or mostly halt their distributions already. As mentioned earlier, REITs with overseas assets are the ones currently out of favor with investors. Apart from CORE, the other two US office REITs have also halted distributions. Manulife did so last year after breaching its loan covenants. Prime US REIT is still paying distributions, although it's only paying 10% of its distributable income. So substantially, for all intents and purposes, it's really in the same situation as the other two, given that it is highly geared and needs to retain capital to deleverage itself. The other REITs that are also not paying include EC World REIT and Dasin Retail Trust, which are based in China. Lippo Malls Indonesia Retail Trust is also another that has stopped its payments. I think the three US office REITs are really in the same boat, where the spike in their gearing has really been due to lower appraised values of their portfolio. The issues in the US office space have been widely reported, where, you know, work from home has been a dominant trend still. The other three REITs are also highly geared, although there are some differences. Lippo Malls Indonesia Retail Trust stopped paying distributions to holders of its perpetual securities, so that triggered a stopper provision to unit holders as well. EC World REIT, meanwhile, said last month it was suspending distribution for H2 2023 due to what it calls insufficient funds, as the sponsor and its subsidiaries continue to be unable to pay its overdue rent receivables under the relevant master leases. Dasin Retail Trust said last year it was not able to declare distributions as it defaulted on around $910 million in loans. So it has not announced its second half 2023 results either. So it's a little bit of a different case for the various examples we've seen.
Okay, so I hear what you're saying. REITs such as Lippo Malls and EC World and even Manulife US REIT were forced to halt distributions for one reason or another. But CORE halted its distributions without being forced. I mean, the way I see it, even though that move had a negative impact on the market price of its units, CORE is preserving its long-term value. I mean, it may ultimately end up with higher debt costs, of course, when it refinances its loans, and it may opt for less gearing going forward, but it stands a good chance, in my view, of keeping itself intact, which seems to be the really important thing right now. You know, the important lesson for investors is that REITs will usually try to pay out all of their distributable income. But when market conditions change and they need to reduce their gearing and it's not possible to raise equity, cutting their distributable income is a risk investors should keep in mind.
Yes, definitely. I think it's important for investors to keep an eye on the REIT's gearing. So maybe just to touch a little bit on CORE as well. Like you said, they were not actually forced into the situation currently, but the manager has been a little bit preemptive. You know, it's seen what happened to the other REITs that have already halted their distributions, and it has also considered down the line, lenders may not want to refinance its debt, even though it's below the 50% limit that it's subject to. So it's doing this to avoid having the same situation down the line when there's no other choice. So it's a preemptive move, but it's probably also necessary for it to do so at some point.
Okay, so it's the right move, basically.
I don't think they had a lot of choices, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
So, I mean, talking about regulatory rules as well, under the Code of Collective Investment Schemes, S-REITs should not have total borrowings and deferred payments exceeding 45% of the fund's deposited property. The regulatory limit is important, but we should also recognize that many investors also have a psychological limit where crossing the 40% threshold may already leave people uncomfortable. So all six REITs that have halted or substantially halted their distributions so far have gearing in excess of 42%.
Okay, so coming back to my earlier question, would you take a chance on a REIT like Core, where the market value of its units has been knocked down dramatically, but where there is a chance of the REIT ultimately surviving?
Yeah, so for this part, I think it really depends on what your investment thesis is. For the longest times, REITs were seen as stable income generating tools for investors. And if that is your objective, I think it makes a lot more sense to find a REIT that has a more stable capital structure. For the investors that have slightly different objective and are more keen on taking a bet on a favorable outcome that gives upside, then some of these REITs would provide that. But I must say that investors should still be cautious because there is real risk of losing everything. We have seen counters like Prime shoot up because they just paid out a small distribution. But investors should also be very mindful that they have a huge debt maturity of $600 million coming up in July. And whether or not that gets refinanced has huge implications for the REIT. Besides high gearing, investors should also pay attention to interest coverage ratios and financial covenants. BHG Retail REIT, which operates China assets, is another one where investors should be careful because it said its consolidated interest coverage ratio was 1.8 times in end 2023. This was lower than the debt covenant ratio required by the banks of 2 times. However, the REIT has said that it obtained a waiver covering the period up to end 2023 from the banks, and its loans are not due and payable in advance of their maturity date. But it's still crucial to be aware of all these various possibilities that can take place in all these REITs as well.
Still to come, the important role that sponsor groups play, and one REIT that has grown significantly despite the pandemic and surge in interest rates.
In the latest episode of Wealth BT with Genevieve Kwa.
The biggest risk, in fact, is not investment risk. It's the risk that we live longer and we don't have enough money saved up.
What's next when you can no longer shield your CPF special account? The Business Times Wealth BT podcast. New episode out from March 25th. Listen at businesstimes.sg/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, back to Mark to Market from the Business Times.
Welcome back to Mark to Market. Raf, you mentioned earlier that there are at least 6 REITs in Singapore that have stopped making distributions. I thought it was striking that all 6 of them are backed, either fully or partly, by foreign sponsor groups. One of the points that I've made in the Mark to Market column and in this podcast series is that the quality of the sponsor groups behind Singapore-listed REITs really is a differentiating factor for investors, especially during difficult times. All the REITs listed in Singapore have adopted the external manager model. This is not normal practice in most developed markets, but it's been accepted in Singapore, partly because of what leading local sponsor groups such as CapitaLand and Mapletree bring to the table. Specifically, they bring pipelines of high-quality assets that hold up well during economic downturns, as well as capital when required. With the turmoil that has engulfed some of the REITs over the last couple of years, there is heightened scrutiny of the behavior of sponsor groups. In the case of Manulife US REIT, for example, there's been criticism that the manager allowed the REIT to enter the rising interest rate cycle with too much gearing and that the manager did not address the ensuing fallout quickly enough. And when the sponsor group finally stepped in with a plan to recapitalize the REIT, there was criticism that the terms of the deal were not generous enough for unit holders. The point I'm making here is that the track record and resources and ongoing behavior of a REIT sponsor are often overlooked by investors during good times, but they are very important when things turn sour. Ralph, do you agree with me about the important role of sponsors?
Indeed, Ben, I think sponsors clearly are important, and some in the industry have said that smaller REITs in particular would struggle more without a strong sponsor. But other benefits are also, you know, when you have a credit-worthy, strong sponsor, this may also be important to some lenders and help the REIT get financing on favourable terms. So if unit holders do not feel that their sponsors deliver such benefits anymore, they may lobby for change. We have already seen some action taken at some REITs where substantial shareholders who are not controllers have tried to internalise the REIT manager function. Sabana Industrial REIT obviously has been the case dominating the headlines, with Quartz Capital being a very strong activist opponent to the incumbent ESR Group. This is quite a curious case, actually, and I think for us to really understand and appreciate the nuances more fully, we need to wind back several years to the attempted merger between ESR REIT and Sabana back in 2020. Unit holders led by Quartz were then unhappy about the price they were being offered for Sabana REIT by ESR REIT. This eventually led to the deal being voted down. I think, you know, one may guess that some of these old wounds may not have fully healed for many investors, which could explain why Quartz has managed to get unit holders to vote in favour of internalisation last year, despite, you know, some of the warnings and signs that have been pointed out by others in the industry on the challenges that would follow.
Ralph, the push for internalization at Sabana REIT is really fascinating to me. First of all, I was surprised that Quartz managed to push through resolutions last year to boot out the manager and begin the process of internalization. There was more than enough information out at the time that the process of internalization was going to be uncertain and probably quite expensive. Yet, unit holders of Sabana REIT decided to roll the dice. Now we're in sort of a standoff. I think it's great that investors are pushing for internalization, but it isn't clear to me how this will be achieved at Sabana REIT.
Yes, there's a lot of uncertainty going on at the moment, and I personally don't think that the current approach is very helpful for the minority mom and pop investors who are invested in Sabana REIT. Millions of dollars have been spent, and all the fighting is never really very good for the overall interest of the REIT. We've already seen that the manager has decided to retain some of the distributable income to finance the internalization bid. And the manager has also said, you know, some of the portfolio plans it originally had, it cannot really fully dive into them given the significant uncertainty that's going on at this stage. Of course, you know, I wouldn't go so far as to criticize Quartz's efforts entirely. I think they do highlight some changes to the sector that needs to be considered, and it also keeps sponsors on their toes. But it is also worth pointing out that Quartz is also an institutional investor, and unit holders should consider what the motivations of each party in this entire saga is. Fund managers, you know, in themselves, they don't typically hold an asset forever, and exits are something they always need to consider. Anyway, I mean, what we have seen is really an ugly stalemate, and unfortunately now, the trustee has been dragged into the picture with a lot of fingers being pointed at them on how they could have done better. I feel unit holders should also question whether the anger is fully justified, because the trustee did warn even before the first EGM that this is going to take a lot of time and cost because it's unprecedented.
Yeah, so the fact that it's turning out to be a lengthy process and an uncertain process, you know, this is not new information. The only way I see this matter being resolved is for Quartz and ESR Group to eventually come to some agreement on how to move forward, perhaps by ESR Group allowing Sabana REIT to acquire the manager for a reasonable sum. Otherwise, I guess the only other option for the REIT is for it to be liquidated. But I'm not sure that would make sense for unit holders. What do you think?
Well, would liquidation of the REIT be the best outcome? I think it really depends on who you ask. Some investors that I've spoken to, they feel that the current trading price of Sabana REIT, I think it's about 35, 36 cents per unit, is a discount to the net asset value, and it makes the current price still palatable for an orderly wind down. But some analysts that I've interacted with have also expressed doubt whether the full value can be realized. But it may very well be inevitable that a wind down has to happen if nobody can come to an agreement on anything.
So yeah, so this is a very curious case that's going to keep playing out in the months ahead. Ralph, we've said a lot about what's happening at some of the problematic REITs in the market, but there are also several leading REITs that are doing quite well despite the difficult environment. One recent event that I think is quite relevant was the addition of Fraser Centrepoint Trust to the Straits Times Index last month on March the 18th. This brought the number of REITs in the STI back up to 7. Some investors will remember that the number of REITs in the STI fell from 7 to 6 in June last year when Keppel DC REIT was dropped to make way for Seatrium. Now, the addition of another REIT to the STI was rather jarring because, as I said earlier in this podcast, the whole sector is being weighed down by higher interest rates. But FCT has performed much better than most other REITs, and its inclusion in the STI against this tough backdrop is a useful reminder, I think, to investors that the quality of a REIT's assets and sponsor group are very important, and those are things that investors should focus on. Indeed, one of the key reasons for FCT's relatively good performance is that its portfolio consists entirely of properties located in Singapore, where occupancy rates and asset valuations have held up very well. On top of that, FCT managed to significantly expand its portfolio through the pandemic with the support of its sponsor. One of the biggest moves FCT made was the acquisition of the Asia Retail Fund, which held 5 shopping malls and an office building in Singapore worth more than $3 billion. FCT is not the only REIT that's expanding and enhancing its portfolio despite higher interest rates, of course. Elsewhere, Mapletree Logistics Trust said last month that it would acquire 3 logistics properties, one in Malaysia and 2 in Vietnam, for a total of $234 million. MLT said it would finance the acquisitions with the proceeds of more than $200 million from recent divestments and some additional debt. Now, not surprisingly perhaps, both FLCT and MLT are also components of the STI. These are relatively large market-leading REITs, all of which are backed by strong and reputable sponsor groups. And it's where I think investors should begin hunting for REIT investments. The point is, despite the tough environment, there are many REITs that are still functioning as they should, raising funds and acquiring assets and delivering value to unit holders. Ralph, why don't you have the last word here on which REITs you are watching?
Yes, Ben. So we have discussed a number of points today and a lot of it touch on what are the negative aspects to avoid. So I think when we consider the opposite tack, and you know, investors might be able to then find compelling value in the sector. So I think if we look towards the REITs with strong sponsors, fairly attractive valuations, proactive management in terms of managing their capital structure, relatively good assets with low concentration, stable occupancies and growth, I think that would be ideal. You know, as we mentioned earlier, some of the hospitality REITs have been on top in terms of DPU growth recently. I think there's still some room for growth in this sector, given that visitor arrivals haven't fully recovered to pre-COVID levels. If we talk about value, you know, local office REITs have also been relatively cheap on a price-to-book basis. This is despite stable office rents and the relative attractiveness of Singapore office assets. So it's something to consider. I know we have also touched on how some of the foreign REITs may be struggling, but you know, it's not really the case across the board. I can think of Cromwell European REIT as one REIT that had a number of analysts adding buy calls recently. So looking a little bit deeper in the nuances of each REIT may help investors find compelling value in what is a really uncertain market.
Okay, so it's a very difficult situation right now, but there are pockets of value out there.
Yeah, I think probably in the sort of volatility, investors could find compelling opportunities to ride along the recovery as well.
Okay, let's end on that very positive note. Thanks again, Raphael Lim, for joining me today. That's it for this episode of Mark to Market. I'm senior correspondent Ben Paul at The Business Times.
This is a podcast by The Business Times. Find more BT podcasts at businesstimes.com.sg/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is meant to provide general information only. SPH Media accepts no liability for loss arising from any reliance on the podcast or use of third parties' products and services. Please consult professional advisors for independent advice.